This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity and Business Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Lindsay Page Marcus. Lindsay is a lawyer who specializes in the estates and trust area, but has also written a fascinating new book. And I'm going to ask her today to tell us about that book, tell us what she's watching in the world, what she's thinking about, and a lot more. Lindsay, can you take a moment and introduce yourself and tell us about the book you just authored?
Absolutely. Well, first and foremost, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity. As you mentioned, I'm a shareholder with a boutique firm in Chicago known as Chuhawk and Texan. I'm licensed in Illinois, New York, and Florida, but have a national practice. And at the firm, I have the pleasure of heading up our trust and estates practice group with more than 20 individuals. So it's a fabulous group. And as you mentioned, I'm thrilled to announce that my a labor of love, shall we say, my book, A Gift for the Future, was released on Tax Day, April 18th, with the intention of providing a vehicle to help educate the world on death and taxes.
It was so fascinating. Gift for the Future, conversations about estate planning, and you may be one of the only two in the world that can make this fascinating and interesting and all those things. Tell us a little bit about some of those conversations. What should people be thinking about? What are some of the interesting situations that you see? Talk to us a little bit about this.
Sure. Well, I think one of the biggest frustrations we have as practitioners is really based on the fact that we come across so many bright and successful individuals and families that haven't taken care of estate and tax planning. And as a result of that, they're not aware of the implications it might have for their loved ones or charitable organizations at the time of their death. So the goal here was to provide a vehicle to make the education easy to absorb. So instead of talking in tax code references, I used Jack and Diane from the John Mellencamp song as my hypothetical couple, and we follow them through their life changes and address how their estate plan and tax planning needs might change as they have children, as they start businesses, as they reach higher levels of wealth, as they have grandchildren, become philanthropic, and possibly divorce. But I don't want to leave you guys. I don't want to spill the beans too early.
And let me ask you a question. If somebody asked you to sing a few bars from Jack and Diane, is that something that you would do or won't do?
I think you can convince me with the proper opportunity. Others have teased me that perhaps I should reach out to Mellencamp to see if we could collaborate to write our own extra verse that coincides more with the tax planning and educational goals I have. So if you know anyone who has a connection with Mellencamp, or if anyone listening does, please, please, please help me out.
We'll see if we can do that. The connection that I have to John Mellencamp is my father worked for a company for my entire youth called Bobby Brooks. And Bobby Brooks was the ladies' clothing company. And in the song about Jack and Diane, John Mellencamp references Bobby Brooks, the clothing company, as he talks about Diane wearing Bobby Brooks clothes. And so thus my own personal interest in Jack and Diane and John Mellencamp. And that's a little known fact about Jack and Diane and John Mellencamp. Talk to us about what are some of the most interesting things you come across in your practice today where people are either surprised, happy, not happy. What do they find surprising? People find surprising that Illinois is one of the only states that has its own serious estate tax. Most states don't. What things do people find surprising that you just didn't know?
Sure. Well, I think we see things. What's most surprising to all of us as practitioners is the feedback we get from individuals at all stages of their lives and at all levels of wealth. So on the one extreme, individuals with more modest estates are surprised to learn that trusts and estate planning are not just for the rich and famous. And at the other extreme, those who have amassed a large amount of wealth are really surprised to learn at how many different opportunities we have to be creative and helping to minimize or in some instances, completely avoid tax consequences. As you mentioned, Illinois is what we often characterize as an expensive place to die. So the way the estate tax regime works is based on the year in which you die, the government allows you to pass a certain amount of money tax-free. And we call that the exemption amount. What is exempt or free from taxation? At the federal level, it's insanely high right now. It's $12.06 million. That is temporary, and it's scheduled to drop back down in half in 2026. That was a compromise between the parties when Trump was successful in getting legislation passed to double it. So this year, although I could pass $12.06 million tax-free at the federal level, at the state of Illinois level, I'm only able to pass $4 million estate tax-free. And every dollar in excess of that is potentially subject to estate tax. The rates vary on that spread from $4 to $12.06 million for Illinois residents on anywhere from 28.5%. And then once we hit the federal exemption, we're looking at a tax at a rate of 40 to 50% on every dollar over the tax-free amount. So that's why proactive planning becomes so critical.
Thank you. And talk a little bit more about what else in the estate tax, what do you find, you know, where are things interesting where, you know, people get divorced, they have fights about estate plans. What else is that they get surprised that their real estate tax might be 56%? What else are things that people find surprising or conversations about estate planning?
Well, right now we're in a really interesting time between today and the end of 2025, right before the legislation sunsets. And the law actually says that either I can die with $12 million in my estate, or I can gift that amount. So what ends up happening is many very high net worth individuals are in the process of this use it or lose it mentality that they need to gift the full $12 million before it disappears. And I think many are incredibly surprised to learn how many different options there are for us to create a framework for gifting and reorganizing asset ownership to still meet the family's needs. So imagine we're working with a married couple, Jack and Diane, shall we say, and Diane, for the purposes of this hypothetical, is in private equity. She's made an extraordinary investment in a company that is on the verge of a large liquidation event over the next 18 months. By virtue of being an employee or her involvement, we might be able to value her shares today at a much lower value than what we believe the liquidation event will be in 18 months. So the benefit of gifting is that we're able to gift at this lower valuation, use a portion of her lifetime exemption, and have all of the appreciation moved outside of her taxable gross estate. So timing for individuals in those circumstances becomes critical. And the more time we have to brainstorm the structure that best meets Jack and Diane's needs and those of their family, the better off we are. Sometimes it's done in the form of gifting to trust for the benefit of children. Other times it's done in the form of gifting to a trust for the benefit of a spouse and children. And then in other instances, we'll look to do a combination of gift and what we characterize as a freeze. So perhaps Diane elects to gift a portion of her membership interest in this exciting LLC venture. And there's another chunk that she wants to move outside of her balance sheet or off her balance sheet for estate and gift tax valuation purposes, but she's not ready to part with everything. So perhaps we gift a portion, and another portion we sell her ownership interest to a special trust in exchange for a note so that she knows all of the appreciation will pass outside of her estate, but she'll be able to get some portion back in the form of an installment sale or other transaction with a balloon at the end.
Thank you. And this goes to the point. One of the fascinating things is a couple has about $24 million in that they could pass on tax-free to their children, whoever they want to pass it on to, saving themselves almost $12, $14 million in estate taxes. But at the same time, they're dealing with this great concern that they don't want to pass it all on and leave themselves poor, correct? They don't want to leave themselves on the spot where they later need money. And so you do have these complications, especially when these are, as you said, use it or lose it types of things. After 2026, is that the year? What year do they sunset? And then, so there'll be a rush to get these things done before. And you could imagine families that gave a lot of money away and then find their economic situation is not what they expected. And that's really stressful, I take it.
It can be. The exemption will sunset and revert back to $5 million adjusted for inflation as of January 1st of 2026. That's what the law says today. In order for us to see a change in that, we would have to see a change in party in Washington, D.C., and they would have to move quickly enough in order for them to pass new tax legislation providing for a change. I often remind clients that anytime we're doing planning like this, the advice I give them is the same advice you get when you board the airplane. I want my clients to put their masks on first before we take care of their children. Your children can always, or almost always, borrow for college. You cannot borrow for retirement. And as you mentioned, we never want to create a situation where Jack and Diane need to ask their children for money. So anytime we're engaging in this type of planning, an integral aspect is to work with Jack and Diane's wealth advisory team to help us run projections, to give us with 98-99% certainty that the changes we're proposing making in terms of movement of balance sheet assets will not create an issue for Jack and Diane. But I think that's also another reason why the popularity of spousal trusts have grown so much, because in many instances, Jack and Diane have more than enough to provide for one another even after they make the large gifts that they're contemplating to their children. But everyone's worried about the what ifs. So imagine if Diane creates a trust for the benefit of Jack and the children. It's our hope in that kind of structure that Jack doesn't need the money because it can all potentially pass estate tax-free to the children. But should he ever need it, it's there and available for him.
Let me ask you another question. What motivated you to write the book? How long did it take you? How long is the book? Where can people get the book?
Sure. So my biggest frustration from the first few weeks that I was out in practice was that so many people didn't know that they needed estate planning. My parents, when I first started in the new job, even before I was sworn in as an attorney, my father handed me their estate plan. And just looking at the pile he was holding in his hands, I could immediately identify there was a lot missing. As it turns out, they had gone to their attorney and had asked for the attorney to change guardians in the will. The attorney in turn did that, but never had a conversation with them about the imports of tax planning, avoiding the court system, or layering in creditor protection. My father was a practicing surgeon. So the fact that those documents were not in place, I don't point fingers. But the fact that those conversations had not been had was a real aha moment for me. And I recognized in that moment that if that set of circumstances could happen to my parents, two successful individuals with multiple graduate degrees who care deeply about their family and their community, then it could happen to anyone. And over time, I built my practice with the focus on education. In countless instances, when I had large speaking engagements or would present to groups of executives, many of the participants would ask me, where can I read more? And what I often found were two extremes. One set of information was very rudimentary and often misleading, and another set of information was incredibly complex and overwhelming for even a practitioner to absorb. So the goal in this book is to make it easy for clients to read, whether someone is a stay-at-home partner in a relationship or whether they are a C-suite executive. The book itself, including the acknowledgements and all of the other fluff, is about 270 pages. But I purposefully used very large font because this is not always the easiest type of topic for someone to absorb. So I thought that if it was easier to read on the visual system, it would create less stress. There are diagrams and pictures throughout. And at the end of each chapter, depending on what we're focused on, there's a section called Conversation Starters. And this is why the book is called A Gift for the Future, Conversations About Estate Planning. And those questions at the end of each chapter are intended to prompt the reader to engage in discussion with their loved ones, with their advisory team, or sometimes just internalize it with themselves to figure out what their needs are. The book is available on Amazon. Just search A Gift for the Future, and it should pop out. Available in Kindle, paperback, and the hardback was just released. And I'd love to hear what people think. So if any of the listeners order it, please, please go on and also provide a review. The feedback helps to make sure that the book doesn't get lost in the extraordinary world of Amazon.
Lindsay, I want to thank you for joining us again. Lindsay Page Marcus, brilliant estate planning attorney, author of a new book, Gifts for the Future, Conversations About Estate Planning. Brilliant. Thank you for joining the Becker Private Equity and Business Podcast. Just a pleasure to visit with you, Lindsay. Thank you.
Thank you.